Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You are listening to It's All About Food. We have a really great show for you today, and I'm very excited to bring on a very special guest. Ocean Robbins is with me today. He's the co-founder and CEO of the Food Revolution Network, which is a global community of 500,000 plus members standing up for healthy, sustainable, humane, and delicious food for all. Working with his dad and colleague, 2 million copy best-selling author John Robbins, Ocean has hosted and organized online summits and classes which have reached more than a million participants from 190 plus nations. Ocean also serves as an adjunct professor in Chapman University's Peace Studies Department and as founder of Youth for Environmental Sanity, yes, a global nonprofit organization which he launched at age 16 and directed for 20 years. Ocean has led live in-person events and public presentations for more than 200,000 people from 65 plus nations. He is a recipient of many awards, including the Freedom's Flame Award, the Harmon Wilkinson Award for Distinguished Contribution to the Humanities and Social Sciences, and the National Jefferson Award for Outstanding Public Service. Wow. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Of the ocean iceberg. Thanks for joining me, Ocean.
Great to be with you, Karen, as always.
I just want to say that I am very grateful to know you. You are an amazing individual. I'm glad you wrote this book. It's really important. I really enjoyed reading the introduction and hearing your full story. We can touch on that a little bit, but it's really important to know who you are and where you're coming from. And what touched me more than the story I've heard many, many times and some of my listeners have heard, and I'm happy to hear it again because it's just a wonderful story about Baskin-Robbins. But the other part of it, because you have had so many intense challenges to go through in your life, and no matter what happens, you always stay positive, focused, and just amazing. So here you are, Ocean Robbins, the author of the new book, 31 Day Food Revolution.
Well, I'm so happy to be with you, and this is a big day for me because 31 Day Food Revolution has been really decades in the making, and now here we are ready to share it with the world. Today's the official launch day, February 5th.
And woo! Woo!
Yes, that just thrills me. You know, I wrote this book because for so many people, there's this gap between knowledge and action. You know, a lot of us know that we need to eat more vegetables and less sugar and processed junk. And if that's all that it took, we wouldn't have an obesity epidemic in America. We wouldn't have a diabetes crisis. But at the end of the day, cancer, Alzheimer's, heart disease, they don't care a heck of a lot how much you know, how many radio shows you listen to, how many books you read, but they do care what you eat and how you live. And for so many people, there's this gap between knowing what to do and doing what we know. And so I wanted to cut through the confusion so we know what to do, but also really focus on practical implementation so that we can get results.
Something that your father and colleague said many times, and it came out in numerous books, is the importance, I'm paraphrasing and I won't get it right, but the importance of reaching a broad audience with a powerful, effective message. And it's not about the details, it's about simple actions that everyone can take that will make powerful difference. And you continue this message in different ways in your book, and I really appreciated seeing that. And that seems to be part of the whole food revolution message.
Absolutely. And I'm interested in how we can make the biggest difference for the most people possible. So one of the things that I set out to do with 31 Day Food Revolution is to really make it accessible to everybody. So whether you're, a fairly mainstream eater who's trying to, go out to fast food less and cook at home more, or whether you consider yourself, you know, a black belt who's, you know, trying to figure out which form of heirloom, you know, kale is the best from the farmer's market. You know, the reality is that we all have steps we can take in a toxic food culture to move in a healthier direction. You know, we're surrounded in a sea of a food system that has made profits more important than human health or even the survival of life on this planet. And in that context, it's up to each of us to become what I call a food revolutionary. And if you already feel like your diet is spectacular, I'll bet you have loved ones who could have some, let's say, room for improvement as well. So one of the big focuses I put into this book is not just how you can get your own house in order, how you can put your own oxygen mask on first before helping others, but also how we can save the freaking plane. Because the reality is that we have so many people in the world right now that are suffering and even dying from a toxic food system that is killing us in droves. And so I want to show you how you can be a part of the solution. And the spoiler alert is, it is actually a heck of a lot easier to change the world than you probably ever imagined.
It is. I have to confess, I love the title, but I didn't get the meaning behind the 31 days to begin with. I was like, why did he pick 31 days?
Well, it wasn't because there is a lot of brain science showing that it takes about a month for habits to set in. You know, that once you have done something for a month, you're a lot more likely to continue doing it. And I'm interested in sustainable habit change. But 31 was chosen for a very particular reason, because my grandpa brought the world 31 flavors of ice cream with the founding of Baskin Robbins. And, you know, at the time there was vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry. And he said, gosh, we could have a lot more. And so he invented a flavor for every day of the month. And he brought a lot of smiles and a lot of pleasure to a lot of people. But I'm saying that at the end of the day, 31 steps to health, rather, can bring you more satisfaction and more health and more pleasure even than 31 flavors of ice cream. So every single one of the 31 chapters ends with simple action steps you can take. And you can definitely take one a day and read a chapter a day for 31 days. You can also implement the fundamental principles of the Food Revolution diet plan for 31 days. Or you can implement it, better yet, for the rest of your life, and you'll get incredible results. But I promise, if you just do this for a month, you will see real improvement, and it'll get easier and easier to keep doing the right thing.
Okay, I don't want to give away everything that's in the book, and certainly we can't talk about everything that's in the book in this brief interview. But I did want to highlight some things and things that popped out to me as fun or interesting or informative or just something I wanted to talk about. But the first thing is the four principles of the Food Revolution diet plan. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. So principle one is to eat less sugar and processed junk. Principle two is to eat less animal products, particularly from factory farms. Principle two is to eat more whole plant foods. And principle, I don't know if I said my numbers right, that's principle three. And principle four is to consciously source your food so that you're choosing more organic, fair trade, sustainable, non-GMO, local food, and less of foods that are destroying people and the planet. And I'll elaborate on each of those for a second. So, you know, when we look at the blue zones, which Dan Buettner has researched for National Geographic, these are the places in the world where people have traditionally lived the longest and healthiest lives, where it's typical for people to live healthy, vibrant lives past the age of 100. And in the blue zones, they're very different. They're very different parts of the planet, but they all have a few things in common. People in the blue zones tend to eat very little sugar and processed junk. They tend to eat very little animal products, between 0 and 10% of calories, whereas in the United States, we're at 34%. They tend to eat a lot of whole plant foods, and they source a lot of their food locally, and a lot of it was organically grown. And I find this fascinating because there's so much controversy about the optimal diet for human beings in the public conversation right now. But when you actually look at long-term epidemiological studies, over 10,000 of them published in peer-reviewed medical journals, when you actually look at the blue zones and the actual results for human beings over the long haul, there isn't a lot of confusion. It's pretty clear. We need to eat less sugar and processed junk, less animal products, and more whole plant foods. And when we do, we can reap incredible benefits. So the principles are pretty clear and pretty, I think the data is pretty overwhelming. The jury is in on this one. Now, we could argue till the cows come home, literally, about whether the optimal amount of animal products in the diet is at strict zero, or maybe for some people a little bit of something or the other, you know, wild fish or whatever, from a purely health perspective. But at the end of the day, what's not arguable is we need to eat a whole lot less animal products than we are right now. We could argue about whether organic is dramatically better or only a little bit better than pesticide-contaminated foods. And there are studies pointing in both directions, but there are definitely studies showing that farm workers are dying in droves from pesticide exposure in the fields. There's no question that some of the neurotoxic pesticides that are being sprayed on our foods were developed during World War II to kill people, and that in sufficient quantity they can cause cancer and birth defects in humans. And we don't know quite what that quantity is. Obviously, the dose determines the poison. But I think that it's pretty clear that if you want to do the best thing for your family, then moving in an organic direction is going to be optimal. So there are details, you know, how much fat is optimal for a human being, which types of fat, are any bottled oils, you know, toxic, or can a small amount be acceptable? You know, is coconut oil, you know, the most highly saturated fat in the food supply and therefore poisonous, or can it in some circumstances be beneficial for brain health? There's still more study needed on some of these things, but what's not confusing is the big picture, and I don't want us to lose sight of that. Eat less sugar and processed junk, eat less animal products, eat more whole plant foods, and you can radically extend your lifespan and your health span, and that's the big point, and that's what we need to stay focused on.
You mentioned a number of experts in your book, and one of them is Susan Pierce Thompson, who we know and love and who has just done amazing work with people who are trying to reach their ideal weight. And one of her platforms, or the foundation, is no sugar, no snacking, no flour. Actually, it's no sugar, no flour, no snacking.
Yeah.
And which is related to fewer processed foods. And it's really very basic. People that focus on eliminating refined sugar, refined flour, and snacking can lose a tremendous amount of weight.
It is well documented. And, you know, Susan's in chapter 5 of 31 Day Food Revolution, we look at sustainable habit change and how you can learn to love foods that love you back. And I draw heavily on Susan's work because I think it's so important. You know, she has helped people to release over 400,000 pounds in the last 4 years. And she's developed a program that's, if you're concerned about weight loss, it's the most effective thing out there. And we've worked with her extensively in Food Revolution Network. And, you know, the cornerstone is that a lot of people are fundamentally addicted to certain foods. And willpower isn't enough. If you're one of those people who sometimes finds that you're craving foods that aren't in your best interest, or sometimes finds that you're eating foods that you really don't want to be, you know it's not good for you, but somehow you don't feel like the true author of your food life, then you may be dealing with something a little deeper than not knowing what to do. You may be dealing with some food addiction itself. And so one of the cornerstones there is to get off sugar and flour, and yes, also no snacking. So you plan ahead. Every day you plan what you're going to eat, what your meals will be tomorrow, and then you stick with your plan and you don't veer from it. And sugar and flour both enter the bloodstream very quickly, and they provide this kind of dopamine hit to the body. And for people who are dealing with addiction issues, it can be very overwhelming. It can be triggering, actually, to get that hit in the brain. And so that's where going off of the sugar and the flour can be really, really helpful. And then in the long term, we also look at not just how do you get free from food addiction, but how do you give your body the nutrients it needs to really thrive. A lot of people are calorie rich, but they're actually nutrient starved. And that can also lead to cravings for food because your body is freaking confused. It's getting plenty of calories, but it's not getting some of the critical nutrients that it needs. When you saturate your body with the really healthy nutrients, when you eat lots and lots of vegetables and whole grains and legumes and fresh fruits, when you really give your body what it needs, then in many cases, your cravings for other kinds of food will start to go down. The wonderful news here too is that you have a microbiome. It's kind of like the new tofu. Everyone's talking about it, right? You've got a microbiome, the digestive tract and the bacteria in your gut, and they do an amazing job. They're actually like a second brain to you, and they produce neurotransmitters that give your brain pleasure and peace and ease, and they digest your food. And we need to feed our microbiome in a good way, because if you feed the bad guys, then you're going to feed the type of bacteria that love sugar and processed junk. If you feed the good guys, you're going to feed the type of bacteria that love fiber and whole plant foods. And then they will create cravings too. If you've ever felt hunger in your stomach for something specific, it might actually be that it's the bacteria in there that are telling you they want it. And so I'm interested in how you can feed the good guys by getting your body on the right track. And the wonderful news is that the farther you get down the path of healthy eating, the easier it gets, because you start to cultivate a bacterial milieu in your digestive tract that will love the good foods.
And they'll start telling you to crave the good foods too.
It's true. I mean, this morning I had steamed kale for breakfast. I'm not kidding. Now that might sound wacky and weird to some folks, but I did, and I liked it, and I was salivating before I started eating it. And I just want to say, if that sounds crazy or weird to you, it's completely possible to actually learn to fall in love with foods that love you back. And it's actually a bit distorted that so many of us are drawn to foods that are not in our best interests. This is not normal for human history. This is something that's only been around for the last couple generations, but you can turn it around. You don't have to be a victim of a toxic food supply or a food industry that's hell-bent on hooking you on a lifetime of addiction to their products. You can become the author again of your food choices and bring them into alignment with your values. And when you do, your body will thank you for the rest of your life.
I'm glad you brought up breakfast, and you talk about breakfast in the book and how breakfast doesn't have to be cereal and milk or toast. It can be all kinds of things. Our culture in the United States has been focused on eating certain specific things for breakfast, but people have been eating all kinds of things on the planet forever. And we need to get out of that mindset, because steamed kale can be a great breakfast.
It can. You know, the truth is that I have a problem with breakfast, and it's not really with the meal itself. It's what our society has done to breakfast. You know, recently I was on a road trip with my twin sons, who just turned 18, by the way. We went on a trip out to, we were in Utah at the time. We were going to country music concerts, that was their idea, and visiting national parks. The national parks part was my idea. And so we were out on the road, and we stayed in a hotel, and they had a, you know, continental breakfast in the morning. And I didn't really have high hopes, but I was like, okay, let's check it out, guys. It's free. So we went down, and, you know, they had factory farm bacon and factory farmed egg scramble, and they had waffles drenched in maple syrup. And, well, actually, it wasn't maple syrup. It was high fructose corn syrup masquerading as maple syrup. And then they had, you know, with eggs and milk, and they had some cereal with, you know, refined white flour and sugar added. And then you could have that with some milk. And it was just, I was looking at this and I was thinking, this is bizarre. You know, we want to start our day off right. And there's nothing here that we could eat. Even the orange juice was from, you know, orange juice concentrate and had all kinds of junk added to it. Thankfully, our twins had the same reaction I did. They said, let's get the heck out of here and get some real food. So we drove across town to a natural food store and got ourselves some breakfast there. And that was it for the rest of that trip. We weren't doing anything with, you know, hotel breakfast. But it struck me that this is actually normal. So this is what kind of breakfast most people are eating. And there's nothing about breakfast that says it should be saturated with sugar, white flour, and animal products. It's actually possible that you can start your day off with vibrant, healthy food. So in chapter 10 of 31 Day Food Revolution, I actually go into this in some depth and share my top solutions for breakfast. And one is, this might sound crazy, but it's my personal favorite, is leftovers. When I get up in the morning, the last thing I want to do is spend an hour in the kitchen. I want to get going with my day. I've got things to do. I've got activities to jump into. Usually I've got a few emails to respond to. And so I want to get rolling, and I like to actually cook up the night before. So when I'm packing up, I usually, we make extra dinner and sometimes a lot of food, actually. But when I'm packing up from dinner and putting food away, I'll just put a nice container in the fridge, which is my next morning's breakfast, maybe even lunch. And then it's ready to go and I can just grab it and go in the morning, which is a wonderful feeling. And there's nothing that says that your body can't enjoy some wonderful quinoa and steamed veggies and curry sauce, you know, for breakfast. And then sometimes I also like to do something a little more traditional. And so there are wonderful options for, you know, things like pancakes and, you know, oatmeal can be quite nutritious, especially if you load up with some berries and some nuts. You know, there's a lot of great things. I love smoothies too, and they can be fun. And sometimes we make extra smoothie. We'll make a few days worth at once, maybe 2 or 3 days, have that in the fridge ready to go. And I like green smoothies. I'm not big on, you know, lots of fruit because I don't think our bodies do well with a saturation of fruit sugar first thing in the morning, but a little fruit can be wonderful to make it sweeter and more delicious. I just don't want to overdo it. So adding some greens, adding some nuts and seeds can make it highly nutritious. And then let's never forget about chia and flax seeds. They are just superfoods packed with omega-3s and protein, but also packed with fiber. And they are just so good for our bodies. So my favorite breakfast of all actually is an overnight chia soak. I soak chia seeds in unsweetened soy milk and add in a bunch of blueberries and a bunch, usually frozen blueberries, and a bunch of chopped up banana and some nuts or seeds and maybe a little flax meal that I grind up as well. Mix that all together with some vanilla, sometimes a dash of maple syrup if I'm feeling uppity, and stir that over and leave it overnight. And the next morning, I have to chew it well because the chia seeds take some chewing to digest. But oh, is that ever tasty and delicious. So that's my favorite breakfast of all. You can also do a similar thing based around oats. Soak them overnight, add some nice spices, add some vanilla, blueberries, banana. Just wonderful.
I have a favorite breakfast. I call it breakfast black beans, and I put cocoa powder in my black beans and then maybe some dried fruit just to balance out the bitterness. But, oh, it's so good.
Excellent.
And since I brought up beans, can we talk about beans?
Sure.
You mentioned beans in the book, and there's been a lot of pushback about beans, but the evidence is overwhelming about what an important food. I'll call them legumes. Legumes are, there are like some 45,000 of them, and they're just amazing.
Well, they really are. And, you know, they've gotten a bit of a bad rap because some people think of them as for poor people. I don't think the fact that they're affordable should cause us to think less of them. I think it should cause us to think more of them because legumes worldwide provide about a third of the world's protein for humanity. They're an incredible source of nutrition. They also provide a great amount of the world's fiber. They are rich in protein and fiber, and they're in the blue zones, which Dan Buettner studied, as I mentioned earlier, for National Geographic. He looked at where people live the longest, healthiest lives, and they eat very different diets. But there is one particular food that they have in common that they eat in all of the 6 blue zones that Dan Buettner studied, and that's legumes. Now, beans are the most of the legumes are beans, but we want to include split peas and lentils in the mix as well. So that's why we call them legumes. And these are just incredible foods. Now, some people do struggle with gas. They're not called the musical fruit for nothing. And there are a couple main reasons for that. One is they have a lot of oligosaccharides in them. And when you soak them for 48 hours before you cook them, making sure to pour off the water every 12 hours, then you remove a lot of the offending oligosaccharides and you help to create the conditions for a more less offending, shall we say, product in the end. So that's a wonderful step that you can take is to soak them. And then the other issue is they are very high in fiber. And anytime you change your bacterial digestive tract significantly, it can cause gas. Often people who take probiotics find they get gas for a little bit, especially when they take a large quantity. And similarly, legumes can actually change the dynamic. So quite a few people have gas early on when they start consuming legumes if they haven't been for a while, and then it slowly goes down. And you may want to start with small-ish quantities if you find that's a problem for you. And you also want to make sure they're properly cooked. We use a pressure cooker with our legumes, even after soaking them for 48 hours. And so they're really soft. If they're a little bit crunchy, that can be a problem. And there are lectins in there that, you know, I think the lectin hype has been way overblown, but there are some lectins that are not optimal for human health, especially with kidney beans. And so if you, you know, cook them well, especially in a pressure cooker, then you clear all that out and you're left with a product that's, for most people, pretty darn healthy. Now, still listen to your own body, because you're the own you're the only expert on you. Out of 7+ billion people on the planet, you're the only you there is. And doesn't matter really whether studies have shown that certain foods are helpful for most people most of the time. That doesn't mean they're healthy for you all the time. So listen to your body, see what you learn, see what works for you. Legumes are something that doesn't work for everybody, but they work for most people, especially when you do it right.
One of the problems today with people who are on the standard American diet or something like it, where they're eating a diet rich in refined foods and refined sugar, box foods, packaged foods, processed foods, junk food, fast food, all that stuff with all the artificial flavors and colorings and pesticide residues and all that stuff, is that the individual microbiome changes in response to that. And for those that recognize that they need to change their diet and go on the 31-day food revolution, for some of those people, it's really hard because their bacteria really aren't ready.
Yeah.
And even eating beans and whole grains, they're just so uncomfortable.
Right, totally.
So we know that. We hear that from you.
Yes, absolutely. It's true. And, you know, I'm really interested in helping everybody to make progress towards their goals. You know, I look a lot at what I call food integrity. You know, in martial arts, there's this concept of being centered. When you're centered, then you can absorb, for example, a push without falling over. And when you're not centered, even a little tap can knock you over. And my view is that when it comes to food, when we align our food choices with our values, our life takes on an integrity and a center and a potency that doesn't just affect cellular health and cardiovascular health and brain health. It doesn't just affect your body at a cellular level. It also affects your consciousness, your sense of congruency, your sense of power in life. And so my interest is in helping you to clarify, what are your values? What do you love? What lights you up? What does integrity mean to you? And how can you make congruency between your everyday choices and those values? Because when you do, you'll have more strength, you'll have more aliveness, you'll have more pleasure, you'll have more joy. And you'll be a force to be reckoned with in the world.
There's something that's bugging me a lot lately, and that's rancid food.
Yeah.
And there's rancid food all over the place. And one of the things is people don't even know what rancid food tastes like. And they eat it and think it's okay.
Yeah.
And it's not.
Yep.
You talk a little bit about some of the foods that are rancid that we should avoid in the 31-day food revolution.
Sure. Well, you know, rancid can be, yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, even flax seeds, mm-hmm. especially when they're ground, can go rancid. And it tends to be the foods that have some oil in them that go rancid the soonest, whether it's nuts and seeds or, you know, even grains can go rancid. But, you know, grains, and when they're whole grains, they last pretty well. And but some things, you know, you better keeping them in the freezer or the fridge. But nuts and seeds and things that have fat, particularly, you kind of want to think of them as slightly perishable and keep them moving. And once they're ground up, they become a lot more perishable. And, you know, rancidity tends to have a bit of an odor to it. So smell your foods. And if they've been sitting in the cupboard for a while and they smell a little off, then I don't care if they're listed as one of the healthiest foods on the planet. It's probably not healthy to eat. So keep things moving and keep planning ahead. And one of my favorite actions you can take is to actually clean out your fridge and your cupboards and your spice drawer so that you are able to own what you've got and know what you've got and make use of it. the average American wastes over $2,000 every year in food that just literally goes bad. We just waste it. And you can do a lot to clean that up when you keep on top of your food storage world and when you plan ahead. A lot of people do most of their shopping by impulse. We may go to the store with a list, but we end up buying all kinds of things that we weren't planning on. And statistically, those foods tend to be the least healthy ones. So when you plan ahead and shop from a list and only get what you actually need, you're much more likely to eat what you actually get. And that can be really beneficial for your budget as well as for your health.
Eating well does not have to break the bank. There's lots of smart ways to do it. I eat primarily organic, and I just shift my priorities. There are plenty of things that I don't have, but my priority is healthy food.
Yes, absolutely. So when people, you know, there, certainly food is a place to invest. And, you know, when you spend a little more on the right foods, you can absolutely spend a lot less on, you know, medical treatment and feeling like crap. I mean, last time I checked, cancer was pretty expensive. Heart disease was pretty expensive, and feeling like crap and not being in peak mental state was really expensive too. And the reality is we can save a lot of money in the long run by not eating foods that make us sick. But let's talk for a second about how you can eat healthy on a budget, because it's a real concern for a lot of people, that, you know, the feeling that whole foods take your whole paycheck and that really healthy food is some kind of elitist luxury. And for people who are just trying to survive, just trying to make it through the day, sometimes that's how it can feel. The way I look at it, food 1.0 is about survival. If you can get enough calories to make it through the day, then that's success. And food 2.0 is about commerce. It's about the buying and selling of goods and flavors and taste and texture and cuisine. And then food 3.0 is about health. And that's where I think we need to go to. It's where healthy food becomes the central organizing principle of our food system and of our food choices. And there are healthy profits to be made in healthy food, but they come from healthy food. Now, I think that for those of us as consumers who are wanting to eat well without breaking the bank, some of the top tips are, number one, the most expensive calories you'll ever consume are the ones that make you sick and kill you, right? So choose to avoid the foods that are toxic. Number two, shop from a list and plan ahead so you don't need to waste $2,000 a year like the average American family does on food that goes bad. Number three, when you eat healthy, nourishing foods and give your body the nutrients that it needs, you may find that you need less calories overall. You may find that you don't need to consume the excess of 500 calories that the average American gets, which can be good for your waistline, but it can also be good for your budget. And then I also like to focus on the real superfoods. I'm not fascinated by $30 a pound goji berries from the Himalayas. I'm interested in the foods that are super precisely because they can do the most good for the most people. So I'm talking things like cabbage and legumes and onions and carrots and, you know, foods that are packed with nutrients that are not going to break the bank. And we look at that in 31 Day Food Revolution. And also, organic is wonderful. But if you can't afford organically grown foods, don't let that stop you from eating produce and, you know, all the vegetables and all the wonderful foods that are best for you. So we also look at what Environmental Working Group has researched as the clean 15 least pesticide contaminated foods, and also the dirty dozen most pesticide contaminated foods. If you don't want to take the whole chart with you into a store, here's the super highlight, is that the least pesticide contaminated foods are the ones that have a peel that you take off, whether it's avocado or watermelon or even mango or papaya, whether it's all the ones that have some kind of a shell that you don't eat. Those ones, if you're not going to go organic, those are the places where you can save the most without getting your pesticide exposure. And so, it's really good to put that stuff into practice. And then the most dirty dozen actually tend to be some of the berries, apples. These are foods that you really want to either get organic or wash well before you eat them, because they tend to have a lot of pesticide contamination. And lastly, restaurants are a source of a lot of food expenditure for a lot of people. And I love eating out at restaurants. I really do. But I recognize it's a premium price I pay to have someone do all the cooking and cleaning for me. And a lot of times restaurants are having to cut corners in order to, you know, make things work, and they don't have to show their ingredients to customers. And so a lot of times they'll cheat a little bit and use ingredients that you or I probably would never put in our own kitchens, even some of the healthier restaurants. So I say that, you know, let it be a treat. Enjoy it when you're traveling or when you want to have a date night or something, but don't make it your mainstay if you're interested in optimal health or in saving money.
The last thing I wanted to talk about is autism and your twin boys. I can't believe they're 18. I can't believe how tall they are.
Right? Me either. They're 6'1".
I can't believe it. On vegetables primarily, right? Yeah. Anyway, can you talk about some of the lessons that you've learned with your experience with your children and autism?
Absolutely. So yeah, our twins were born 9 weeks prematurely in 2001. And, you know, we'll never know most likely why exactly. There are all kinds of factors that can go into that. Of course, twins are more likely to be born prematurely anyway. But there are all kinds of different dynamics going on here. There are studies showing now that multiple generations back, toxin exposure can show up decades later in the gene pool. And so my wife's mom, when my wife was in her mom's womb, was her mom was eating fish from Lake Michigan. And we now know that women who ate fish from Lake Michigan in the 1970s, that their offspring and their offspring's offspring were more likely to have certain birth defects and various challenges. So whatever the cause may be, our kids were born super early. We didn't know if they would live or die. For 6 weeks, they were in intensive care. They did make it. Thank goodness. They are miracles. And they're on the autism spectrum. And so we've been learning to live with that and work with them and support them in every way possible. And they are absolutely beautiful. They're compassionate, loving, wonderful young men. I just admire them so much, and I have so much fun with them. And it's been a tough journey along the way. And in their first 10 years, they never made eye contact with us, at least not with me. I'd never had the experience of looking into my son's eyes and just beaming and connecting. And then we discovered a program called Sunrise when they were about 10 years old, which focuses on building connection instead of trying to change behavior through training them to behave differently. And you learn to enter their world and join them in it. And so our son River one day was chewing on Barbie feet, which was his passion at the time. He would spend hours just chewing on Barbie feet. And I see him doing that. And instead of trying to yank the Barbie out of his mouth and thinking, oh my God, how is my son ever going to have a dating life if he chews on Barbie feet, or wondering what pesticides or what toxins might be leaching out of the plastic into his body from the plastic that was made in China, you know, I pick up another Barbie, and sitting across the room from him, I just start chewing on her feet. And this amazing thing happened, which is that River looked at me. You know, he left his isolated world, and he saw that I was joining him, and he looks at me, and this huge smile comes over his face. And I could almost hear him thinking, oh my God, there is intelligent life on this planet. So suddenly he and I are just beaming at each other across the room, chewing on Barbie feet. And then it felt like an eternity, and I was just in bliss. I was like in connection with my son for the first time. Then he gestures for me to come closer. It turns out his Barbie has 2 feet. He was inviting me to come chew on the other foot of his Barbie. So then I come over and I do just that. And now we are beaming in each other's eyes from, you know, 3 inches apart, chewing on Barbie feet. And I was the happiest dad in the world. And this has been repeated multiple times since. And in 31 Day Food Revolution, I share this story. And then I say, you know, what does this have to do with the food revolution? Well, actually quite a bit, because, you know, I don't know if you've noticed that not everybody eats quite the way you might want them to, or lives quite the way you might want them to. And sometimes people make choices that seem odd to us or disturbing to us. And if you ever have felt that experience in your life, I want to invite you to remember the words of Dr. Martin Luther King, who said, "You have no moral authority with those who can feel your underlying contempt." You know, when we judge people, when we pathologize people, we lose moral standing in that relationship. So I've been learning, and I keep learning, to truly love my children unconditionally, just because. Not because of, you know, the things they do or don't do, but because of who they are. And I think everyone deserves that. So they've taught me so much about unconditional love. And I want to bring that, hopefully, to my readers, hopefully to my mission, hopefully to our world. Because River and Bodhi have taught me, you know, amazing lessons. And they're doing well. They're incredibly loving, generous, caring, bright young men. And they still have their challenges, you know, with autism. And they also have a fundamental sense, I think, of love in their hearts and lives. And I'm grateful to have played some part in that.
Mm. Well, that's a beautiful place to bring this to a close. I like to say on this show that we tune in love. And yeah, it really is. Love is the only answer. And especially unconditional love.
It is. And then we want to put that love into action, and we want to learn to love foods that love us back. And we wanted to learn to love our precious bodies, and we want to learn to love our planet and all of humanity. And, you know, the reality is that I think love is where it's at, so to speak. And I want to help you bring love into your relationship with food. And that's really at the core of why I wrote 31 Day Food Revolution. So I just want to again say that I am celebrating that today is the day it is finally available for the world. So grab your copy from your local bookstore, hopefully an independent. You can also, of course, get it online or go to 31dayfoodrevolution.com. Again, that's 31dayfoodrevolution.com. Grab your copy or copies. That makes a great gift. Spread the word. Share it with loved ones. Let's get this message out there, because you know what? We don't need to have 14 million people dying of heart disease every year. We can slash that number. We don't need 8 million people dying of cancer every year. We can slash that number. We don't need 2/3 of our population overweight or obese. We can turn it all around. It starts with you and me, the food we eat, the lives we live, the books we read, the radio shows we listen to, the messages we share with our loved ones, and the stands we take with our lives. So thank you for being a part of this revolution with me. Thank you, Karen, for your incredible partnership. I love all the work we get to do together. We didn't really talk about that so much, but you're a huge part of Food Revolution Network and all that we do. I am so grateful. I love what you bring to the world. I love working with you. And everybody listening, I love working with you too. So thank you for being a part of this revolution, and let's do this.
This isn't video, this is audio, but all during your last monologue, I've been cheering and raising my hands and yelping and woohoo, yeah. I also have to add that it's been such an honor, such a privilege. I love you and Phoenix, your kids, River and Bodhi, and I've been long-term friends now with your dad, John Robbins, and Deo Robbins. They've been so good to me. You all have been very good to me, and I just love seeing how you've all grown. And it's just been a beautiful experience. And the Food Revolution Network, we've needed it for so long, and I'm glad that it's doing so well.
Whew. Yes.
Okay.
Me too.
Thank you for joining me today on It's All About Food. I will see you very soon.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
That was Ocean Robbins, everybody. Woo-hoo! We did not mention that in this wonderful book, The 31 Day Food Revolution, there are many delicious recipes at the end of the book, and some of them are from myself and my partner, Gary DeMattei. Also, if you're in the New York metro area, just in a couple of days, Thursday, February 7th, Ocean Robbins will be in New York City at the Rose Modern. This is the Ocean Robbins book release celebration. You can register, get a ticket on Eventbrite. If you need a link for that, email me at info@realmeals.org and I will send you a link. And it would be great to see you there. This is Ocean's book launch event. It has been an incredibly busy week for me. Now, do I say that all the time? I apologize if I do. But it's been like extra, extra, super, super busy. And it makes getting ready for this program an extra special challenge that I always am ready for. So in about a week, I will be flying back out to California. As you may know, my partner Gary and I, we spend a lot of time on both coasts. We direct some theater on the West Coast, and Gary's actually out there now. He's been out there for about 6 weeks directing A Midsummer Night's Dream by William Shakespeare with the group that we always work with, Playful People Productions. And I will be going out there and joining him very soon. And then, towards the end of our stay there, we will do a Swingin' Gourmets event. And that includes making dinner for a small party of people and talking about food, healthy food, and singing. And if this sounds fun to you and if you would be interested in participating in an event like this, let me know. You can email me at info@realmeals.org. I'd be happy to give you more details. It's really fun. But meanwhile, I have a week left and I've made myself an ambitious to-do list ever since Gary left. There are things that I'm doing in our apartment, renovating, painting, cleaning, repairing. It's crazy. All the while doing all the other things that I do. And it's been very, very challenging. I promise you I have no trouble sleeping. When I hit the pillow, I am out. Which is really nice, actually, to work so hard that when it's time to sleep, your body just is so ready. I don't know that I'll finish my to-do list, but I'm going to get very, very close. But all the while I'm doing these crazy tasks that I gave myself to do, I wanted to make sure that I ate very well. And I know some people, when they're alone, tend not to want to prepare food as much as when they might be with someone else. And I didn't want to fall into that kind of habit. I wanted to put into place many of the things that I recommend to other people to do, which is kind of difficult. It's really hard to understand someone else's lifestyle. And when you're recommending things, at least I know when I recommend things, it's easiest to share tips from my own personal perspective, my own lifestyle. I cannot emulate your lifestyle. I have my own life. But sometimes when my schedule changes or my activities are such that it's harder and harder to prepare meals, I sympathize a lot more with many of you out there who struggle with getting in the kitchen and preparing meals so that you can eat healthy all the time for you and your family. I get it. And that's when batch cooking really comes into play. And I also dipped into the freezer a lot. I made sure I had lots of healthy frozen vegetables, cauliflower, peas, corn, mixed vegetables. These really come in handy for making very quick soups and stews, or sometimes just warming them up and plopping them on top of a big bed of greens with a nice sauce. This is what I did. And if you want to know what I did, you know where to go. I put it all in my What Vegans Eat daily blog. And I'm looking back on the last week, it makes me hungry. Some of those pictures are really good, and I remember eating each of those dishes. One of the things that I did, I love cauliflower. I know I've mentioned this a bunch of times, especially when I've spoken with Chef Del Sroof, because he does lots of great things with cauliflower. I always end up thinking I'm going to make something different with the cauliflower, and then I end up steaming it and just devouring it, because I like it so much just the way it is. I did make some cauliflower this week, and there was some leftover. So I took that leftover cauliflower and blended it to make cauliflower cream. Have you tried that? Just blended cooked cauliflower? It's crazy. It's so good. It's so flavorful. Now, I imagine if you wanted to doctor it up a little, you could add maybe some nut milk, blend it with some nuts to give it a little fat, or add some herbs and spices and seasonings. But just alone, cauliflower cream, it's beautiful. And so I made a soup, and I made some other things, and I just plopped a dollop of it on there. Any kind of dollop of something white and thick makes a dish feel decadent. when Gary is here and we sit down and have a meal with a big salad, we tend to make some kind of nut or seed salad dressing where you blend a nut or a seed with water and add some vinegar or some lemon juice, lime juice, maybe some other flavorings. We do this a lot. Gary does it more than I do it. Thank you, Gary. And when I'm alone and I'm not ready to start blending and doing 20 things at the same time because I'm in a hurry, I've opted a few times, maybe more than a few times, to take salad that comes in one of those 5-ounce bags. And I bought a bunch of these with arugula, so I would just grab like half the bag, maybe the whole bag if I was really hungry, and I'd splash it with balsamic vinegar, and I love that. I'd also put some frozen raspberries or frozen blueberries on it, and if you just let the berries sit for a few minutes, they defrost really, really quickly. So a green with the berries and a splash of balsamic vinegar. If I had a moment, I might chop up some onion because I like raw onion in the salad. And Dr. Furman tells us we should have raw onion in our salad. I was nice to myself, too, a few times where I chopped a lot of extra onion and I stored it in the refrigerator so I could just sprinkle some on my salad every day. It was just there ready to go. I don't typically buy these salads that come in the bags pre-washed. I usually like to buy a head of kale or a head of collards or maybe some romaine and break it up myself and rinse it and go through that whole process. These last few weeks have just been so overwhelming that I opted to use these salads that come in the bag. And for people who are really busy, this is really a nice convenience. They're triple washed, many of them, so you don't have to rinse them. If you feel better rinsing them, you can. But this is a fast way to make a salad. Grab the greens. Maybe if you can chop the onions in advance like I did, you just sprinkle them on. You grab some frozen berries. You throw them on the salad. And you can add extra things. If you have olives in the house, just throw them on. And then splash it with a balsamic vinegar. To me, that's just a great salad. I can't help but think of Susan Pierce Thompson, Dr. Thompson, whenever I'm splashing my balsamic vinegar on my salads. I remember her telling this story. If you're familiar with her, she has a program called Bright Line Eating, and she's helped many, many people lose weight and reach their ideal weight. And for those that have a highly addictive personality and are addicted to sugar and refined flour and who knows what else, drugs, whatever. Some people have specific personalities that are more susceptible to addiction, and she is one of them. When she reduced all of these foods that she didn't want to eat as she was developing her plan, she started to use balsamic vinegar on everything, and it became almost like an addiction where she loved balsamic and just consumed tons of it. So whenever I put balsamic on my salad, I think about it because balsamic does have a sweet flavor. It's sweet and pungent or tart or sour. That's what I'm looking for from the vinegar. I think it's a perfect combination. So if you don't have an addictive personality, you can use balsamic vinegar liberally. I don't think there's anything wrong with balsamic vinegar, but you know, too much of anything isn't good. Too much water, you can drown. One of the events that happened this week was with Dr. Michael Clapper. And I'm happy to say that I got to pre-record an interview with him while he was in New York. And that will air next week on February 12th. He was here for a variety of reasons. There was the Real Truth About Health conference on Long Island. And then he came into Manhattan and we organized a very special event at Candle Cafe West. I wanted to talk a little bit about that for a moment. It was a really lovely event, and you know I love the owners of Candle Cafe, Candle 79, and Candle Cafe West. I think they're the best restaurants in New York City and maybe everywhere. I love them, and I love the owners, Joy Pearson and Bart Potenza. I've had them on this program many times. I can feel the love in every bite of food that is served at their restaurants. Joy tells me she tells everybody in the kitchen to add love to the food, and I believe that. This was a prefix dinner event. It was not inexpensive, but they were very generous with the food. It was kind of nice, actually, to be at an event like this where you knew all the food was going to be good and you could share some of it. They had appetizers, three appetizers for everyone to share. And I met some really lovely people. Some of them were vegan, some of them weren't, but were moving towards more plants in their life. And they were really interested in finding out more information. And we had a lot of fun. We had nachos, some of the best nachos I've ever had, all vegan, of course. And a mezze platter that had the traditional hummus and baba ganoush and things like that. And then some crystal rolls, which was mostly raw vegetables in a rice paper. We all got to choose our main dishes. I had a tofu and stir fry dish, which was very delicious and not what I was actually expecting. It was not your classic stir fry. It was really, really good. I like stir fries, but the tofu was separate from all of the sauteed vegetables. And then again, they let us share desserts. And I think this was brilliant because they offered three desserts. And how often have you been out to a restaurant and you want to try all the desserts? Or everyone in your party orders something and then you share them. So we got to do that. What was especially nice is the desserts were not very sweet. And almost anywhere you go, desserts, in my opinion, are too sweet because that's what America likes, sugar, sugar and refined flour. These desserts were not that. They were very, very good. I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Michael Clapper, but he's been around for a very long time, and he was one of the first vegan doctors to start talking about reversing heart disease and diabetes. I remember he put out videos back in the 80s. Does anybody remember videos that we put in VCR machines? Yeah, he was making them back then. And he's a very wonderful, very kind, compassionate, and intelligent man. So I hope you tune in next week for my interview with Dr. Michael Clapper. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Don't forget Ocean Robbins' event on February 7th. I hope you pick up his book, The 31-Day Food Revolution. You can always email me at info@realmeals.org. Visit me at responsibleeatingandliving.com for lots of wonderful, luscious recipes and my daily blog and archives to this program. It's All About Food. Have a delicious week, everybody. We'll be right back.